you say
when you know they want to leave as bad as you want them to stay? Hey.
This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
Yeehaw! Happy snow day, everybody. Now that I'm an adult, isn't it nice when it snows on a day you don't have to work? I no longer get the snow days off if it happens on a school day. So I hope everyone else who didn't have to work got to enjoy that. Very nice. Thank you so much for being with us here on a day that's not so snowy. 11:01 on the wake-up call. Special shout-out to those on Levinson's 94.7 for taking the time to be with us. And those at Blue Ridge Graphics for allowing us to be on the air. You can find Blue Ridge Graphics at Meade Avenue and East High Street here in Charlottesville. They provide custom t-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, online, brgtshirts.com. All right, you know, Charlottesville spends a lot of time talking and thinking about Thomas Jefferson. And today we're going to take it back a couple presidencies and talk about George Washington. Ladies, how are you?
Good morning.
See, there we go. One more time. Shout that out really loud.
Good morning.
Good morning. No.
I don't know, Sean. I don't hear it. Anyway, we are going to be talking about George Washington after Ann Williams set up our microphone. See, I'm going to blame other people. Otherwise, we may have to set up that middle microphone. Let's try this one last time. We do have Carol Abel. Carol?
Hello. Good morning.
See, I can barely hear you. And we have Jennifer Sturzer.
Good morning.
See, I can hear Jennifer. So let's switch to this for Carol. Carol is the volume editor from the presidential series at the George Washington Papers Project. Did I get that right?
Yes.
See, it's so much nicer when you can actually hear people with your microphones on. And Jennifer Sturzer is the editor of the digital edition.
Yes, that's right.
Of the George Washington Papers Project.
Yes.
All right. Who wants to start by telling me exactly what the George Washington Papers Project is all about?
This is a project that started in 1969. It was an effort by the University of Virginia and the Mount Vernon Ladies Association of the Union and various private donors to make the papers of George Washington much more accessible to the public in a written form, and to go beyond the other earlier editions of letters that had been produced in the early 19th century and early 20th century by providing not only the letters Washington wrote to people, but to have his the correspondence that he received from others, as well as all the addresses that he made, proclamations, financial papers.
But why would we do this? I mean, so the project's been going on since the late 60s. Mm-hmm. Here we are, 40 years later. That's a lot of stuff.
Right.
And why do we need this project?
To be able to learn much more about George Washington, not only as a president and a military leader during the Revolution, but as a person, as a member of the colonial society that moved to a revolutionary early Republican nation, to learn about his personality, his character, his family relationships. And the addition of the Washington Papers just give us a more well-rounded view of Washington, so that historians and people who are interested in Washington and the early American Republic can ask questions and create even more historical studies so that we can know him and the era even better.
And Jennifer Sturzer here with us. You're the editor of the digital edition. What's the difference between... I mean, I can recognize that there's somebody who's handling the part that might get published in a coffee table book, and someone who's doing, I'm assuming, digital edition is online. But why do we need two separate?
Well, back in 2005, we were working closely with the University of Virginia Press, the digital imprint, which is Rotunda, and just discussing how we could make these volumes more accessible. And, of course, so many people look to the Internet, whether they're researching for papers or just generally interested in things. I mean, it's very easy just to Google, you know, whatever you need to find. And we wanted to be part of that. And so we looked for ways to do that. And so working with Rotunda, we were able to create an online presence that really captures what we've done in the volumes. But we'd also like to add additional materials, things that we were unable to publish for whatever reason, be it space or just the amount of time that it was going to take. And so the digital edition, of course, gives us that opportunity because, you know, you can sort of put up whatever. I mean, space is not really an object. So we started that work back in 2005, and in 2007, we went live with the edition, and so currently it contains 55 volumes of what we've published, as well as a cumulative index.
That is a lot of stuff.
It is.
For those who are just tuning in, we're talking about the first half of the program. We're going to talk about George Washington in terms of the letters and other papers that he wrote and received. We have Carol Abel and Jennifer Sturzer here who are from the project that's going on there. The back half, we're still going to be talking about George Washington, but we're going to be talking about some sort of, for lack of a better word, and probably not as accurate, etiquette. He had 110 rules that he of civility that he followed, and we'll be talking about modernizing that and another project that's ongoing in the George Washington papers. Jennifer, you're talking about doing the digital version, and how many volumes did you say?
Well, we currently have 55 of the volumes, but we've published more. I think we're up to 58 right now.
Why is there so much stuff?
We have found over 135,000 documents related to Washington. And so it's the sheer number requires so many volumes. And, of course, we also annotate the volumes to help enlighten the reader and researcher so that they can know what's going on in the letters.
But, okay, George Washington, the first president of the United States, certainly one of the most famous, even 300 years, more than 250 years later. But that's I don't want to say excessive, but that's a large number of papers. Is it, in terms of comparison to other presidents and other famous citizens from his time, is that normality?
In some cases, Washington came from a generation that wanted to record their deeds for posterity. And also, he lived during a time when Americans took very special steps to create a nation. And certainly he also wanted to keep an account of his activities and the developments. But throughout his life, he was always very, very aware of the importance of keeping a record of his life. And he frequently thought about creating a house, a building, for his papers. He wasn't able to do that before he died, but he was always very, very aware of the importance, as were many people of his generation.
Did he have a journal or a diary on top of, I mean, you couldn't mimeograph copies of your letters all the time. Did he ask those he sent them to save them for later recordings?
Well, usually when a letter was sent out, it was frequently made with at least one or maybe two copies.
Really?
So it could.
So you hand wrote it twice?
Right. And of course, he would have secretaries to do this for him while he was commander in chief.
The blessing of the administrative assistant.
Right, while he was president. But for security reasons, the mail system was not as always efficient. And so they wanted to make sure a letter got to the recipient. And also, there would be letters recorded in letter books, a type of filing system so that individuals would know to whom they wrote and the letters that they received. So all of those together kind of amassed to a very, very large number of documents.
Is this strictly a historical purpose for putting this project together? The George Washington Papers Project, is that the proper title of the...
The Papers of George Washington.
Papers of George Washington. Is it strictly historical?
It's largely historical. Certainly that would probably be one of our more primary audiences. But we have many, many different individuals and groups who contact our office almost weekly to have questions about Washington. We've had government agencies and museums and libraries. We've had news agencies, and the public in general will frequently contact us for a question.
Are there who's contacting you? Why are they contacting you? They can't Google it and find it on Wikipedia?
Sometimes they can't. One of our more recent questions was, did Washington have cabinet meetings when he lived in Georgetown, Pennsylvania, which was right outside of Philadelphia? And he was there during the summer of 1794. And apparently there's a research effort going on about his Georgetown residence, so we had to do a little research about that.
Carol Abel, one of the editors from the Papers of George Washington Project. Jennifer Sturzer also here, an editor of the digital version. Some of the more interesting things that have been discovered, because I'm assuming that you didn't go into this project already knowing everything about George Washington and then just sort of assembling it in whatever manner you wanted to do, whether you did it by where he lived at the time or some, you know, form of chronologically doing so. What have you discovered, Jennifer?
Probably the most interesting thing I've learned while working on the project is just how meticulous Washington was with his record keeping. I've had an opportunity to work with Washington's farm reports and his financial papers, and these documents are just amazing in their detail. Washington, of course, loved Mount Vernon and loved his farms there. And even though he was away for most of his adult life at the Revolutionary War, in the presidency, he was always very much interested in what was going on back home, and had his farm managers write to him frequently with exactly what was going on, what his various slaves were doing at the time, what the weather was every single day. I mean, Washington was very interested in that, and I just find that fascinating.
Have any of the, I guess, the legends that you hear about Washington been discovered to be proven true or false? I mean, there's always a legend about chop down the cherry tree. I don't know that the first grade teacher actually teaches that anymore, or where that's learned, but it's still an ongoing legend of George Washington.
Right. Well, of course, that, as far as we can tell, that is, was a legend created by Parson Weems to talk about the character of Washington, and certainly we have no historical evidence that he ever did such an act.
Why would somebody create that?
By the time Washington had become president, and certainly when he died in 1799, there was already a national level of respect and awe about the man and his character. And so a lot of early American writers wanted to continue teaching about that character to the younger generations. And so stories such as chopping down the cherry tree, not telling a lie, were ways that writers could talk about the character of Washington in a way that a young person could understand. And it just got perpetuated over time.
Was George Washington possibly the first celebrity of United States at that time? I mean, where in current days, where if you're a celebrity of from wherever, whether it's political, entertainment, sports, you have folks standing outside your, you know, standing outside taking pictures, following your every move. Was that true with George Washington?
Well, when he journeyed from Mount Vernon to New York to assume the presidency, he was certainly greeted in many, many towns by large crowds, and there were celebrations. So in that sense, yes, he was a type of celebrity. There were other Americans who also had national and international reputations, particularly Benjamin Franklin, who was an international man of science and politics.
One of the things in doing my homework for this, and I believe, what's the website address? Because I spent some time there.
Well, we have a project website, which is gwpapers.virginia.edu. And then to get to the digital edition, and that's a longer address.
But can you get there? Is there a link on the
Definitely. That? There's a link on our homepage to the digital edition.
And once again, that?
gwpapers.virginia.edu.
Okay. Because I found two things to be very intriguing to me. One, I believe, was an article, and I'm sort of copying the headline. George Washington had an uncommon awareness of self. And I'd like to sort of talk about what that means and how it applies to the papers that he wrote.
Well, Washington was aware that he lived in a time when Americans were conducting themselves in a way that few people had a chance to conduct themselves, and the fact that they were creating a new nation. And so in that sense, there was an awareness that he took a leadership role. He was also had an awareness of himself from the time he was a young man. As he began to enter the public world, he knew that an individual had to behave and act in a way that would be acceptable to his peers. And so Washington worked very, very hard to create a character that people would accept and respect. And that in that way, he also had a very strong awareness of his self-image.
If you have a question or a comment, 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. That's the toll-free. We are talking about the Papers of George Washington Project going on at the University of Virginia. Carol Abel and Jennifer Sturtz are here for another 10 minutes or so. And then we're going to switch over to another aspect of George Washington and his writings as we talk about the Civility Project, sort of rules of etiquette, rules of behavior that George Washington followed, and a project that's ongoing to discuss modernizing these. Jennifer, one of the other things that I found interesting was that you've discovered a large number of forgeries. Why would people create forgeries of, except for money, why would people create a forgery of a letter that George Washington wrote?
I think money is the main reason. These documents, if you sell them, you know, auction them, you can get quite a bit of money nowadays for them. So, unfortunately, I think that's the primary reason.
Have you discovered anything that you included only to find that it was a forgery?
That's a good question.
Did you pay for any of these? Has the project had to buy any of the papers that either are included, physically included, or that are included in the digital version?
No, we've not had to purchase any of those.
Are there papers out there that you'd like?
Well, you know, we contact private owners or repositories or collections, and if we know they have a document that we don't have in our collection, and we ask for permission to go ahead and print the transcription. And I think most people are agreeable to that. But, yeah, we've never had to purchase any of these things.
You say most people. Have you had incidents where someone doesn't want you to use it? I guess maybe because it makes it more valuable to them?
Sometimes we will ask an auction house to contact the purchaser of a document for permission to print their names. And occasionally we will get a negative answer because the person just wants to preserve his or her privacy. And it could be a matter of monetary security as well.
So this is an ongoing process, 40 years so far.
Mm-hmm.
Why has it taken 40 years to do this, and how much longer before there might be any conclusion to... Because as someone who knows nothing about how this works other than the homework that I've done in preparation for this, it just seems, the silly guy on the street with no knowledge, it's, okay, let's collect it all, let's photocopy it, let's put it in a chronological order, and let's do our thing.
That certainly is an option for some digital editions of historical papers. But what we want to do in our project is to provide a more complete understanding of what's happening in the letter. And so there's a very involved process of editing a letter. First, we have to make certain that the handwriting and the signature and the date are correct. And then we have to decide exactly what type of letter. Is it an ALS, an autograph signed letter in the handwriting of the individual who wrote it? Is it an LS, a letter written by someone else but signed by Washington or the person who sent it? Is it a draft? Is it a document? And then when we move on to transcribing the letter, taking it from the 18th century writing and putting it in a type of modern font for the letterpress edition and the digital edition. But we also want to be very, very careful when we transcribe a letter to read the words correctly. And we want to provide the reader with a sense of that 18th century letter. We want to respect the original spelling. And within some general rules of punctuation, we try to respect the punctuation as well. And one thing I found that when it might seem rather mundane, why do you worry about commas and sentences and periods and so forth? But the placement of punctuation conveys an idea to the reader. And this is what Washington and other correspondents wanted them to read and understand. Of course, we have a number of pitfalls when we transcribe a letter. Frequently, 18th century spelling was not an exact science. Washington, fortunately, was a very good speller and a good had a good handwriting, but even then we can get some unusual letters. His draft letters are a little bit more challenging because he'll scratch out lines and write in very small print in between. But we have a number of correspondents who were not well educated and spelled phonetically. So we have to work very hard to understand what exactly the words are. And then finally, after transcription, we have an annotation, an explanation of the letter. This would be including identification of people and places and also identifying other correspondents that is mentioned in the letter. So it's a very involved process.
Carol Abel here as we talk about the Papers of George Washington Project. Jennifer Sturzer also here. 979-0919-1877 WNRN Rocks. I got a call, but caller, hang on just a second while I do this business. Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Mostly sunny today, highs 40 to 45, upper 30s in the valley, and even a little warmer in Richmond. Partly cloudy tonight, lows in the mid-20s, and partly cloudy tomorrow, highs in the mid-40s. Right now, it's a pretty nice day out there. Some clouds to go with the sun, 26 in the valley, 35 in Lynchburg, 39 in Richmond, 34 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let's thank Salad Creations for supporting us today. You can find them at 110 5th Street in Charlottesville, just off the east end of the downtown mall. At Salad Creations, you can choose from a variety of vegetarian salads or add those with chicken or turkey and seafood, or you can create your own from 4 varieties of greens and 40 toppings and over a dozen dressings. Delivery and catering are also available. Salad Creations, you can find them online at saladcreations.net. And the 22nd annual Toy Lift is now history, and WNRN would like to thank the thousands of folks from Central Virginia who contributed a toy or a book, even a cash donation, to make every child's Christmas a little brighter this year. With your help, Toy Lift collected over 11,000 toys, almost 3,000 books, 100 bikes, and almost $29,000 in donations, and they're still counting. If you didn't get around to contributing, you can still do so at toylift.org. Everybody at the Kids Lift Foundation and WNRN support you for this year. All right, let's see. Ladies, you got your headphones on? All right, we have Philip from Stanton. Hey, Philip.
How you doing?
I'm well. What you got?
Well, I had a question. It's just more of an interest, I guess. The Federalist Papers and such, they're used by the Supreme Court to set judicial precedents. And I was just wondering if these papers have ever been used to set the precedents in law or in understanding the interpretation of anything that's happened legally over the years.
Well, certainly since the time of Washington's presidency, the Federalist Papers have frequently been used as a way to understand the mind and the intent of the writers of the Constitution. And so, yes, from time to time, they are used and are still very, very important to understand the Constitution.
All right. Thanks for the call, Philip. All right. Again, 11:26 on the wake-up call as we have Carol Abel and Jennifer Sturzer here talking about the Papers of George Washington Project. Jennifer, you talk about the digital version. Is there anything different in the digital version that is not in the... Because you mentioned so many volumes
sure.
that you have. What's different about it?
Currently, it's pretty much the same as what we've published. The big major difference is we've taken the volume indexes and created one gigantic cumulative index. But we do have plans for the digital edition to make it different than what we currently publish. We're going to start including documents we were unable to put in the print volumes, and also add Washington's financial papers and his farm reports. So the digital edition will essentially become just a more comprehensive collection of documents that we know about, here in the next few years as we work on those projects.
Have you gotten any negative feedback on, maybe not on the project itself, but on Washington as a whole that have come through the project? Because people make a big deal, and I'm not saying rightfully or wrongfully, but Thomas Jefferson, it's regularly brought up now about Sally Hemings. Has anything like that come across about George Washington due to the project maybe alerting or enlightening folks as to slaves or other issues?
Know about any negative comments. I know a number of historians and groups interested in learning more about the time will use the Washington Papers to further their studies about the slaves that he owned and about their lives. And we can understand a great deal about their lives because Washington was so meticulous in recording everything about Mount Vernon. So really it's more of an enlightening project than anything else, fortunately, that we have found.
Can people go online now to the
gwpapers.virginia.edu.
And is there contribution coming in from those who just read it? And we're about to step into the Civility Project, and I know that there has been sort of contribution from the general public on that, but... what can the average citizen do to partake in the GW Papers project otherwise? Is this just reading my history? Because there's a lot of history to read.
Right. You certainly can read the volumes that are available in libraries, or if you have access to the digital edition, you can do that. There's also our website, which provides a number of articles about Washington and his family and the time in which he lived. So if you're curious or want to learn more, that's also a way of doing so.
Right. And we've had people contact us, too, that, you know, maybe they're studying a specific person that we've mentioned in the papers, and they've really helped us learn more and, you know, maybe sometimes add to the identification information that we have in a volume. So we've certainly had our share of that.
And the genealogists have also
yes.
used our volume as well.
Genealogists?
Yes. Because we identify every individual who writes Washington. And this can be any a famous individual or Joe Blow from the Northwest Territory. And if we can find that individual, we will say something about him or her. And genealogists frequently tap into that, and it helps them to broaden their understanding. And sometimes they also contact us as well.
All right. Carol Abel and Jennifer Sturzer, editors from the Papers of George Washington Project. And I really need to write things down. gwproject.virginia.edu.
GW Papers.
See, and that was my first choice, and I scratched it out. gwpapers.virginia.edu.
Yes.
And we'll put a link to that on the podcast site. Sean's already shaking his head at me like, duh. We'll put a link to that on the podcast site, cvillepodcast.com, and we'll put this program up a little later in the day. Ladies, thank you so much. We're going to switch over and start talking about the Civility Project, which is also a major part of George Washington's papers.
Thank you.
Erica Mitchell, you're the student leader.
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us. We'll have another couple students in here in a moment. The Civility Project, I said this multiple times throughout the last couple of weeks. People would say, oh, what kind of projects, you know, what kind of shows do you have? Come on. Civility. People are like, what? Define that a little better. It doesn't flow off my tongue very well, and I think for many it's the definition doesn't come flying out very easily.
Yeah, and I think that's what we're trying to solve. We want people to know what civility is.
Well, define civility for me.
I would define civility as a way to behave that allows us to interact with each other every day in a way that allows things to go smoothly.
So being civil
mm-hmm.
is, that's just the difference, that's the noun, civility.
Yes.
Is the adjective, is that correct? Do I know my grammar? My mother would be horrendous to find out that I don't, as herself being a former English teacher. But civility is part of being civil.
Right.
And it's part of the Papers of George Washington Project for what reason?
I actually am a research assistant as an undergraduate student at the Papers of George Washington, and the editor-in-chief there, Professor Theodore Crackle, approached me about doing this project. So it kind of started out through the Papers of George Washington, and it was something that he wanted, you know, they thought the project might want to sponsor, and I happened to be an undergraduate student, so we made that connection.
But why? I mean, what does George Washington have to do with being civil? I mean, many people assume that he's that's part of his image, is being an honest man with the character and leadership abilities to be the first president of the United States. But I think many people would say politicians, being civil, things have changed, but really?
Well, the reason that it's associated with George Washington is because when George Washington was around 16 years old and even younger, he copied a set of rules called the 110 Rules of Civility in Company for Decent Behavior. So those rules are kind of the model for what our new project is going to be about. We're trying to create a new modern set of rules based off of Washington's 110 rules.
Why is it needed? Let me rephrase that. What caught your attention about it?
Well, one of the committee members, a student that's working on the project, put it really nicely when he said that everyone's driving on the wrong side of the road and crashing into each other. And we think that we need to remind people which side of the road they need to be driving on, so that way everyone's not crashing into each other. I thought he put that quite nicely, and it is needed. So that's why we started this project.
All right. We also have Carolyn Needham in the room. Carolyn?
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning. And Crystal Yee. Crystal?
Hi.
And thank you. So the three of you are three of how many working on this project?
Approximately 30.
Wow.
30 students.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's getting good gold stars?
Yes.
For doing so? All right, so we have the 110 rules that Washington wrote down in his late teens to follow in life. Why? I mean, and it sometimes it just goes back to simple questions like that for me. What made George Washington decide that he needed to do this?
Well, you know, George Washington, I think, quite famously had a temper. And one of the things we know about him is that whenever he was afraid that he was going to address someone in a way that he would regret, or he was going to do something that might speak poorly of his character, he would take out these 110 rules and he'd reread them. And it would remind him of how he was supposed to conduct himself in everyday life. And that's the kind of spirit we want to take into this project.
Are you just... where can people find the 110 rules from that time? Because they're talking about 1750.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're available actually pretty widely. I mean, especially in Colonial Williamsburg, they have them in books. But they're also available on the Papers of George Washington website. And they're also available on our website.
But you're doing more than just reprinting them.
Absolutely, but, yes.
So are you rewriting them with more, you know, 2000 era word choice? Are you discarding them and coming up with the new 110 rules for living in this, you know, this modern times? Are you adjusting them? What are you doing?
I mean, we're definitely taking them as inspiration for new rules, new submissions that we receive from students and other individuals outside of the University of Virginia. And we're using these to create a more applicable set of rules for people in the modern times.
We are here on Wake Up Call WNRN talking about the Civility Project, George Washington's sort of 110 rules for living life in a proper manner. Erica Mitchell, a student leader on the project, Carolyn Needham, Crystal Yee also with us. 979-0919-1877. WNRN Rocks, your questions or your comments as we've now moved on to the Papers of George Washington Project, the civility aspect of it. Give me a few of the George Washington era rules.
Okay, well, we like to think of them in two kind of categories, ones that we think are applicable for today and ones that we think are not. So,
how about two from each?
Two from each, okay. Well, one, you know, that is applicable today is the very first rule. It says, every action done in company ought to be with some sign of respect to those that are present. That's pretty applicable for today,
okay.
We think. And another one would be the 74th. When another person speaks, be attentive yourself and disturb not the audience. If any hesitate in his words, help him not nor prompt him without desired. Interrupt him not, nor answer till his speech be ended. Pretty much, don't interrupt somebody, and don't prompt them if they don't need you to. So we think that one's applicable.
Yeah, that one, well, it might be applicable, but it's not often followed.
Yes.
And I'm as guilty of that as anyone. Okay.
Another one that's what we find applicable, the 71st. Gaze not on the marks or blemishes of others, and ask not how they came. What you may speak in secret to your friend, deliver not before others. Essentially, if someone has something on their face, don't point it out. Laugh, make a conversation.
But does that qualify as when you have, you know, spinach between your teeth?
it's more civil not to make a big deal about it. If you can talk about it in private, you know, set them aside, bring them aside, and talk to them about that.
All right. So what's something that's no longer considered applicable by the group of 30 who are working on this project?
I remember one. It goes something like, kill not vermin, lice, or ticks in the presence of others. I would assume that modern people in the modern age have better hygiene than they did back then. So
where are you living?
Another one is the 9th. Spit not in the fire, nor stoop low before it, neither put your hands into the flames to warm them, nor set your feet upon the fire, especially if there be meat before it. In the modern age, we have stoves. And
all right. Can I ask real quick the age of the folks in the group? Are you all University of Virginia undergraduates and graduate students?
Yeah, I'm 22 years old. I'm a fourth year student, as all of us are. So.
But do you have any community members participating? Do you have any folks from the faculty or administration?
A lot of the editors of the papers of George Washington are advising us on this project. In terms of the community, the way the project actually works is we're asking for submissions on a certain website, and people can submit rules. So whether people realize it or not, they actually are advising us, and they are kind of dictating the direction of the project. We've gotten a lot of submissions from community members, a lot of submissions from students, and we've gotten submissions from all over the United States. So it's a pretty broad community that's helping us out.
11:40 on the wake-up call as we're talking with Crystal Yee and Carolyn Needham, Erica Mitchell, about the George Washington Papers Civility Project. Call up 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, the battle between the Ravana Solid Waste Authority and Peter Vanderlinde over our trash is nothing new. But with the recent victory, Vanderlinde's private business, can the Waste Authority even survive? Should they try? And the latest problem for Halsey Miner is the probable foreclosure of his Fox Ridge farm. Is this just another recession concern for another typical American? The Hook. All claims must be made in writing. And support for NRN today coming from Blue Ridge Mountain Sports. Blue Ridge has winter clothing from Patagonia, Mountain Hardware, and the North Face, as well as trail shoes from Montrail, Merrill, and Vasque. The Blue Ridge staff has over 30 years of experience in keeping you warm and dry in any weather. You'll find Blue Ridge Mountain Sports in the Barracks Road Shopping Center here at Charlottesville. They're at Wintergreen in Richmond, online, brms.com. 11:42, but don't go anywhere. Drew Thompson will be here for Les Temps Perdue. If French isn't your thing here at NRN, that means the time's gone by, and it's 80s and 90s alternative music. Tune in for it next. Les Temps Perdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music. Here comes Drew Thompson in the room. That just shows that I'm always right. 11:42 on the wake-up call. The ladies from the Civility Project are here as we talk about this. The 110 rules from George Washington to live a civil life. So you're getting contributions from, I guess, around the nation. What are some of the contributions that you've received? All right, because you're not just modernizing the 110 rules. You mentioned the two that don't seem to apply to modern culture. So if you X those out, you have to have at least two modern ones to replace them. So it's not just updating them.
Yeah. I don't want to give the impression at all that what we're doing is just taking all the ones we think are applicable today and rewriting them, because that's definitely not the case. What we've done is we've gotten a lot of contributions that deal with a lot of stuff that George Washington didn't have to deal with. George Washington didn't have cell phones, he didn't have email, he didn't have texting or Twittering or anything like that. So there's a lot of new things that we have to take into account for. So a lot of our contributions have become, people are noticing these problems that have developed with technology, and these are certainly things George Washington wouldn't have had to deal with. So we're dealing with those, and we've received a lot of submissions just, you know, and a lot of George Washington rules are being replicated in our new set just by the nature of the rule. They're just good rules to follow your life by. So that's another thing that we've gotten a lot of.
Well, and that makes sense. And I think the very first one, or one of the first two you mentioned, was don't interrupt someone else when they're talking and pay attention when they're speaking. But again, he didn't have iPods. They weren't driving. So you must have received a vast number of new or suggestions to put into the rules. So share some. Whether or not they actually make the final cut, what are some of the more applicable ones that you have received? And I'm sure that there's a weird one or two out there as well.
Well, you brought up a good point about technology, and we do have an entire section devoted to technology in the rules, and we received a ton of submissions regarding use of cell phones, use of email, and a lot of them have to do with basically respecting the people that you're interacting with. And don't use your cell phone when you're in a conversation with someone. Don't go on your email or your Facebook when you're in class. It's a really simple thing, but it's something we thought was really important to include because it really does dictate how you convey respect. And I don't think people necessarily understand that when the normal standard has become that it's okay to be on your BlackBerry or your iPhone or your email while you're interacting with other people.
I think, you know, you mentioned some of the strangest rules that we've gotten, and I think we actually haven't got that many strange. People always really want to know, you know, what's the weirdest rule you've gotten that doesn't make any sense, but we have gotten one that we continually use because it is probably the strangest one that we've seen, and someone wrote to us and said that we should include a rule that said I don't remember if it was you ran over an animal in the road or if somebody else had previously ran over the animal, you should get out of your car, scrape it up, move it, and dispose of it properly. And we thought that might be the job of VDOT and not necessarily ours. So we didn't think that was necessarily a rule of civility, but it was quite strange that someone felt that that should be done.
So not necessarily going to make the final 110 cut.
I don't think that one.
How many have you received?
Over 1,500.
Really? Over 1,500?
Yep.
Have you found that this affects your own behavior since you begun the project, or calling out your friends when you see something like this going on?
I know, especially for me, I think that, I don't know, I think the 30 of us definitely feel kind of like role models for, you know, the university community, especially people who know that we're involved with the project. I think we're kind of held to a little bit higher standards. We really know what we should be doing, and, you know, you feel a little bit extra guilty if you pull out your cell phone to text during a conversation, or perhaps you check your email real quick during class. You do feel that pang of, oh, you know, I know better than this. I shouldn't be doing it. So it's definitely a learning process, but I think that we can all agree that we've definitely upped our civil behavior and community because we know people are kind of holding us to higher standards.
And I think also that a lot of people believe that these rules should be in effect, yet they don't follow them. So actually having them written down, actually having it as a sort of authority on our actions allows us to watch over ourselves more.
Have you found that some of these are already laws? Because you mentioned texting and Twittering, and I know that Virginia, I believe, starting this past July 1st, it's illegal to text and drive at the same time. Are there others out there that, you know, it's supposed to be a rule of civil behavior, but it's already a law, and isn't that awful that we have to actually make behaving as a gentleman or a proper woman to be put in the legal books?
Well, we've actually discussed this, and we're being advised by Judith Martin, Miss Manners, and she told us that, you know, if something's a law, you don't need to include it because the legal realm and the realm of civility are two different things. And where laws may convey certain things about civility, like you shouldn't be texting while you're driving because it's disrespectful to the people that you may potentially crash into, which is a literal form of what Erica was talking about, we aren't going to cover legal aspects. It's more just how to conduct yourself day to day.
Yeah, I mean, the real goal of our rules is to fill in gaps for people. People want to know what to do in these situations. You know, who pays? Who, you know, do I always need to open the door? Do I always need to say thank you? Things like that. We're trying to fill in gaps for people. And if the law's taking care of it, you know, we think that we'll just fill in the gap. Although there have been suggestions about, you know, driving in the left lane and stuff like that if you're driving too slow. We've gotten a lot of traffic suggestions. We do include it, but not the parts that are already law.
979-0919. Call up with your suggestion. We have about 10 minutes left as we talk about the Civility Project, a project done through and along with the Papers of George Washington Project here at the university. Carolyn Needham, Crystal Yee, Erica Mitchell here, a student, I can't think of the word that I want, but student participants in putting the project together. Thank you. You can call in and give me word selection. If you'd like, here's a contribution from the WNRN Studio instant message site. One wrote in to say that George Washington did this. They were discussing George Washington doing this in the history class, and he did it as part of a school project, and because he wanted nothing more than to be an English gentleman. Comments on that? Is it true? Do you know sort of the historical background on this? Did he do this because, you know, he got slighted by the date that he wanted, who said he needed to be more polite? Did he do it because he was required to do it? It was his school thesis project for the summer.
No, I think that it was probably pretty common practice for these rules to be copied. They dated before Washington time for sure, and I'm sure he copied them. And we're actually, that's another interesting part of our, you know, the editor-in-chief of the papers of George Washington is doing a little investigation to find out exactly where these 110 rules came from. And we really think what happened is maybe they were brought over from England, perhaps, this is, you know, all speculation, perhaps by his brother Lawrence, or his father, when they came over to America. So I think that he probably copied them and followed them because, you know, that was part of the school lessons that had been done previously. And I think that, you know, of course, everybody wanted to be a gentleman, whether it be an English gentleman or, you know, a new, brand new American gentleman. So I think that the rules definitely played a large role in that for Washington.
Tell me a little bit more about Miss Manners and her role. Did she contact you when she heard about the project? Did someone say, oh, you know what, if we're going to modernize these, let's talk to someone who's highly recommended as providing modern-day etiquette?
Well, Professor Theodore Crackle, the editor-in-chief, as I mentioned him before, actually had met her previously at a White House dinner where they had both received humanities awards, you know, one for the papers of George Washington and the other for her civility work. So he contacted her to ask her if she might be interested in advising us on this project. And since then, she's came to Charlottesville about three times, sat in with personal meetings with us and myself, and done a lot of advising on rules that we've gave us advice. She's been really, you know, pushing us to come up with something brand new, something kind of gutsy compared to the old work that's been done on civility.
Okay, you brought it up. So what are some of the gutsy things that are being used?
I think what we're talking about is that she's told us don't be afraid to approach any subject, or it might be taboo to talk about it in a public setting, but it is something people wonder about. So,
all right, well, let's jump into that, because usually the folks who are currently bothered are in church right now. So it's the seven words of George Carlin that you can't say on air. But if you're talking about a sex issue or a drug issue or something else, you're not going to bother me. And I look over at Sean McCord to see if he blushes when you say something.
I think that, you know, we are dealing a lot with relationships, and relationships have changed a great deal over the century, for sure. And we're dealing with sex. We're dealing with hooking up. We're dealing with, you know, the complications that arise between doing it casually and doing it, you know, long term. We're dealing with rules that, you know, deal with money. Money's become a really important part of our society. And although it's not a taboo subject, there are a lot of things about money that, you know, are taboo, talking about how much you make, you know, things like that. So we are addressing these issues that people maybe were afraid before to talk about.
Well, let's have a couple of the financial ones. Do you have your list with you?
Yes, we do.
Carolyn looked at me and gave me that, oh, please don't ask me to talk about the taboo ones. So we'll start off with the financial ones, because I'm curious as to what some of the more, have you set your final 110 yet?
No, we've got to narrow down to approximately 125, I would say, and we're working on cutting some out, combining them, and also maybe getting some feedback on things we haven't included. So we're
okay.
About at 125.
So let me have a few. I'm curious as to what some of the strongly considered 110 modern rules may be. Let's start with some of the financial ones.
I think in regards to money, it discussed a lot with dining out, dining with friends, dining with business partners, and at the same time, personal relationships that get into the money realm. I know it's a confusing thing for everyone, especially in college, where it's becoming prevalent to us at this time. Just we're trying to prescribe a civil way to discuss money or to leave that discussion out when it's appropriate.
Yeah, I think if you're looking for some specific rules, you know, if you're dining with a group of friends, assume that the bill is going to be split. That's our rule, just to clear that complication up. But if I ask you out on a date and I'm taking you out, I'm paying for the bill.
I'm a little old for you. I'm sorry.
We're taking that, you know, we're trying to set these concrete rules just to get rid of all this confusion. Don't brag about your money. And don't assume because somebody's rich that they can afford to pay for everything everywhere you go. That's another rule that we've thought about.
Is there anything in there about financial between parents and children? Because, I'm 45 years old, and my father, he will knock me over to make sure that he still pays the bill.
That's a good point. We actually haven't considered that yet, but now that you've mentioned it, I'm sure in our next meeting we will definitely
think about that. And it makes me feel, sometimes it's just like, you know, fine, go ahead. But sometimes it's like, my gosh, you know, can I contribute somehow, please? But he, you know, that's whether that's generational, whether that's age, whether that's being the father, you know, I don't know. But so you don't have anything in there in that sense?
Well, you know, generally we would say if your father asked you to go have dinner with him, then it would be appropriate that he paid. But if you had asked him to go to dinner with you, it would probably be appropriate that you paid. But, you know, that's a relationship that is a little bit more complicated than just basic rules.
11:56 here on the Wake Up Call, winding down our conversation on the Papers of George Washington Project and the civility aspect of it, the 110 rules George Washington followed in life. This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS-FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. All right, we're winding out of time. Carolyn, you've got the rules. I want to know a couple of the sexual relationship rules for modern times.
I think generally what we're saying is, you know, if you hook up with someone or something like that, you should acknowledge them. You should not pretend they don't exist, or you should acknowledge the fact that it happened.
Oh, so when you run into them the next day or the next month or whatever, you don't just bow your head and kind of look the other direction.
Yeah. And also, you know, we're dealing with, you know, make sure that if you have STDs or something of that nature, be frank about it. Let people know. That's a rule of civility, believe it or not.
Ah, an STD?
Yes.
Okay.
So, we also have rules if your friend is interested in somebody, you know, don't hook up with them. And also don't think because you can't call dibs on everybody. So don't, you know, get mad at your friend if they hook up with somebody that you might have a crush on, because you really can't have dibs on every, you know, male or female that's around.
All right, let's take this call real quick. And I got to do this. Caller, are you there?
Hi, this is Fran.
All right, Fran, I got to turn my microphone off so these women can listen. So ready, start talking now.
Okay. You were talking before about the origin of the 110 rules, and on an NPR site from May 11th, 2003, it says here that these 110 rules that George Washington copied were based on a 16th century set of precepts compiled for young gentlemen by Jesuit instructors. And this is from historian Richard Brookhiser.
All right, excellent. So now we know where to go.
Yeah, I think that, I'm not sure if I heard you completely correct, but we generally attribute them to a Jesuit priest of the 16th century. So I think that perhaps school teachers could have also been Jesuit priests, or they pulled from those rules the Jesuit priests had.
And I think Fran is also might be referring to the comment that I read from someone who wrote in online saying that it was George Washington's project, and then I didn't let you fly through the response to that off enough. Fran, thank you very much for
right.
the actual response.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, just about a minute and a half left. I want to know another taboo topic, modern rule. And again, you don't have to say any dirty words. So taboo topics are relationships, right?
Right, yeah.
Okay, and finances. What else qualifies in that category? I mean, Miss Manners must have told you the proper way to discuss the topic.
I mean, other than those have really been our most controversial topics. Other than that, we're dealing with stuff that is, you know, every day that people have just forgotten about. So,
is one of the goals to divvy up the number, the 110, in an even form?
No, actually, our goal is to take, you know, consensus of what people are actually interested in and what people think are the biggest problems, and then that's what we're giving the most attention to. Our relationship section is probably our biggest section right now. We have a lot of sections on communications with technology and things like that, so it's not by any means supposed to be even, but it's supposed to be representative of the people who have given us submissions and also of what we think is most important.
All right, I'm going to go out with this. Civility Project, Erica Mitchell, Carolyn Needham, Crystal Yee, on, and Robert called in with a comment. Says, a good idea for the rules to be modernized, since a lot deals with conversation. Ladies, thank you so much. And you've got
something coming out
in January, is that correct? Where we finalized?
Yes, early January, mid-January, somewhere around in there, we should have our final set released to the press, and it should be widely available for viewing.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Have a great day. Next week, Mark Smith from the Grateful Dead Show will be here. Gentlemen representing Magic Hat Beer and some other craft beers as we talk about that topic. And maybe I'll even taste one or two. Adios.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook. An innovative